It's all the files of the whole park. It tells you everything.
Sir, he's uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
Back in 2011, during Occupy Wall Street protests, a certain hacktivist collective truly came into its own.
Greetings. We are Anonymous. On September the 17th, we called for a peaceful protest to occupy Wall Street, and we delivered. We witnessed the streets of New York flood with protesters in the thousands and Twitter feeds explode with Occupy Wall Street hashtags. We have marched with
The years since, Anonymous exploded in popularity and even became the constant pop culture reference point to all hacktivism, or even just hackers.
Greetings, brothers and sisters. We are F Society. By now, you know us. You've seen what we are capable of.
But as we've discussed on the show, lately, it kind of seems to have disappeared. Until the latest Black Lives Matter protests seem to have kicked it back into the headlines. I got Motherboard reporter Lorenzo Franceschi Bicirai on the show to tell us more. Recording from my insanely hot apartment in New York, I'm Ben Maku, and this is Cyber. Lorenzo, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here and looking forward to talking about La Liga, which is coming back this Saturday, baby. Yeah. Wait, sorry.
Nobody cares about the Spanish league. This is Cyber, right? Listens to this. This is not the Cyber.
All right. We can talk about Cyber. That's fine.
So this is a group that you and I have a lot of experience covering. And I've done a lot of documentaries on Anonymous. I've met some of its, you know, oldest members. But, you know, we did an entire podcast on this with Biela Coleman, who's been sort of the official Anonymous whisperer for years. But they kind of seem to have disappeared over the last few years. And then suddenly one morning, I believe now it's a few weeks, I woke up to a bunch of texts from people asking me if Anonymous was back and if it was a real thing. And I saw on Twitter, Anonymous was trending. And I was like, okay, what is going on here? Did they do something? And then their main channel, Twitter account, I think it's Anon News, right?
Yeah, your Anon News. It's sort of their official, or the most official, I guess you can get.
Yeah, the most official mouthpiece of Anonymous, essentially. Like, went up by millions of followers. So anyway, you dug into it. What happened?
Yeah, so I guess what happened is that it's 2020, so everything is possible, right? I remember, I think it was Sunday, 2 weeks ago, when a friend messaged me saying, hey, I'm digging into Anonymous. It looks like they're back. It's fascinating because a lot of the Twitter accounts that are sharing Anonymous content seem to be bots or K-pop, like Korean pop fans. And I was like, what? Like, what the fuck is going on? And I guess the answer is, I don't know, really. But what we know is that it does seem like there's definitely interest in Anonymous again. And by that, I mean that there's a lot of accounts on Twitter who are like claiming that, you know, Anonymous is looking into attacking police and supporting the Black Lives Matter movement, to protest the killing of George Floyd. And so far, we have to say, though, that there isn't really a lot of evidence that they're doing much. One anonymous Twitter account shared personal details of the Minneapolis Police Department, but it looked like they were collected from like past breaches.
Doxes?
Yeah, past doxing attacks and stuff like that. So it didn't really seem like it was a new hack. But for some reason, and I think it's still people like Biela Coleman and others, like my friend who is looking into this, are still trying to figure out exactly why and who is behind this sort of resurgence. And, you know, for those of you who are not super familiar, Anonymous is this, like, you know, almost mythical hacking group, often represented by the Guy Fawkes mask from V for Vendetta. Great movie, by the way. Probably worth rewatching now. And they used to be very active, especially I would say around 10 years ago, 10, 9, 8 years ago. And at the time, it was a very, and it's always been a very hard movement to figure out, because by definition, they are anonymous, meaning they don't have any leaders. Even within the group, there were like splinter subgroups like Lulzsec and AntiSec.
Scott, those arrests strike at the very core of the international hackers network Anonymous and its offshoot cyber gang Lulzsec. For the FBI, it's a bit of revenge.
One of the suspects, nabbed in Ireland, is accused of hacking into this FBI Scotland Yard conference call on cyber gangs.
Whoever has got your operation, if they want to fire me an email, I'll put them in touch with our intel cell who are trying to find who's got interest, and we can get you a copy of this statement, see if it makes sense.
The suspect, who goes by the name Palladium, then taunted law enforcement by posting the call on the internet. Now he and five other suspected hackers have been arrested.
So it's always been hard to figure out exactly who Anonymous is, whether they're even, you know, doing any hacking, or they're just good at, you know, tricking the media into thinking they're doing hacking, which is part of the point. So I think this is kind of what's happening now. For some reason, people are latching onto this, you know, this symbol of activism, but it's really hard to tell whether they're back.
I mean, as we've covered before in the past too, you know, Anonymous did have some very great, very effective hacking groups within it, or affiliated to it, or were adjacent to the movement itself. You know, you look at something like Lulzsec, it was a real, you know, it was a real hacking group that did some stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Lulzsec is definitely the one that deserves more attention here. All the members of Lulzsec were part of Anonymous, which at the time meant being in, you know, some IRC chat channels where people coordinated stuff like DDoS and more basic stuff. But the members of Lulzsec, who most of them now are, you know, just regular folks working in InfoSec, and actually some of them have written for us, funnily enough. But yeah, they were sort of like this splinter group that organized in a smaller chat channel. It was a much smaller group. Like the core were like 5 or 6 or 7 people. They were all pretty young, you know, like we're talking about teenagers or early 20s, but their skills were serious. They hacked H.B. Gary, which was a government contractor. They hacked Visa and PayPal, if I'm not mistaken, and many others. And eventually they got so much, you know, they attracted so much heat that the FBI...
Stratfor.
Yeah, Stratfor, exactly, another government contractor. And so at that point, they became too, you know, too dangerous, I guess. And the FBI went after them. The FBI turned one of their leaders, whose nickname was Sabu.
Hector Xavier Mansour, who tweets anti-government messages under the alias The Real Sabu, is accused of hacking the Senate's sensitive files to download confidential information. Mansour, described as a Lulzsec leader, was arrested last year, and sources say he began cooperating with the FBI.
His real name was Hector Monsegur. So they turned him into an informant, and eventually, with his help, they got most of the gang, except for like one person who has never been identified and sort of got out of the group before it was too late. But yeah, they were basically an Anonymous offshoot, and most of their ideals were the same as the Anonymous ideals.
Yeah, and all this to say is that Anonymous has in the past been an effective force. It's been an effective hacking group. And, you know, it really did write the book on hacktivism, or was really one of the first to at least make it mainstream and to become sort of the face of it. Because now, you know, you look at stuff like Mr. Robot, mm-hmm. you know, probably the biggest fictional hacking show of all time. Very clearly, F Society borrows from Anonymous. But the question is, like, since then, I mean, since these bigger hacks that happened, its name hasn't been associated with any big operations. And, you know, people or hacktivists that you and I have interacted with have kind of taken the mantle from them as the top hacking group, like Phineas Fisher.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting to look back at the evolution of hacktivism, which is a term that was invented actually by a member of the Cult of the Dead Cow. I'm actually just reading the book by Joseph Mann on this very early, like almost a legendary hacking group from the early 90s. And in the early 2000s or late 90s, they recruited this guy whose name was Oxblood Ruffin, which you know very well. And I think he was on Cyber like a year or so ago.
Yep.
And he was the one that pushed for the group to become very active in politically. And he was basically the guy that invented hacktivism at the time. And yeah, as you said, like Anonymous in the early 2010s took the mantle from CDC and really made it popular, because I don't think CDC, the Cult of the Dead Cow, ever was so mainstream as Anonymous is and was. And as you said, like Mr. Robot is the perfect example of that. I mean, even the masks used by the F Society members are clearly inspired by the Guy Fawkes masks. The whole movement, you know, in Mr. Robot is very similar to the Anonymous movement. So yeah, like I think that there's a very important part. There's a very important place in hacking history for Anonymous, even though some people don't really believe that it was ever that good of a hacking group, other than the Lulzak guys and some other people. But yeah, it's more like, more than skills, it was their ethos, you know, their bravado, their attitude, the fact that they were very vocal about politics on Twitter. They inspired like an entire generation. You know, as you said, Phineas Fisher is clearly inspired by them, even smaller and less politically savvy, I would say, groups like the CWA, Crackers with Attitude, that claimed to be like pro-Palestinian, even though they didn't really care. Like even those kind of groups were clearly inspired by Anonymous. So yeah, it was clearly a very influential group, but as you said, in the last few years, it's sort of disappeared, in part because, you know, some of their members grew up, some of them went to jail and maybe don't want to go back to jail. And yeah, it's very surprising that now it's coming back. In fact, I think we spoke with Biela Coleman for a story last week, and she was very, she was herself very surprised that they're getting so much attention now. And I think the open question here is there something else behind this? Like, is this, and you know, I have no evidence for this, but like, I wonder if, you know, someone is creating bots and sort of flooding the zone, the Twitter zone, with anonymous content to maybe confuse the, muddy the waters, or somehow confuse or create some confusion. We'll see.
You know, it's also, you know, it's worth mentioning as well. You know, Anonymous, some of the beauty to it was that anyone could kind of join.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone could join or kind of take up the mantle. And I think
exactly.
You know, who's to say it wouldn't happen again? And you know, I guess, you know, some of those Anonymous chat channels are just not the same as they used to be. But maybe there's other ones that we don't even know about right now. Because, you know, again, Occupy Wall Street, Anonymous really kind of came into its own after that. And it was all about, I mean, this is after Optionology and the Scientology hacks and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of came to a head as a protest movement, or an arm of a protest movement, that then obviously extended into Arab Spring, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's something worth keeping an eye on. It could end up being something.
Yeah, I mean, I think the both the political and economic circumstances are ripe for something like that to come back. You know, maybe we'll come back under a different name. Maybe we'll become a more, less of a large movement. Maybe we'll be another Lulzak, or who knows, maybe Phineas Fisher will come back and do something. I don't know. But like, I think it's definitely, you know, it's a similar, we are in a similar situation than we were 10 years ago, right? Like the Anonymous movement at the time, I think it was in part inspired by the, you know, the economic struggles of post-2008 crisis. WikiLeaks at the time obviously was very influential for Anonymous. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't really exist right now. But yeah, there's a lot of social unrest and clearly a lot of appetite for something like Anonymous to come back. So yeah, I agree with you. It's possible that someone, you know, will take that mantle, or the mask, I guess, in this case, and really, you know, resume the hacking times for Anonymous, or maybe it will be a different group. But yeah, I think it's a sign that, you know, hacktivism isn't really dead, and it makes sense. You know, you can't really kill hacktivism. It's such a, in part, it's always been part of the hacker ethos to be, you know, to be politically active, especially in Europe, and then to want a better world.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just like, can you ever kill activism?
Yeah, I think it's impossible, even though it seems like it's gone away a little bit. Maybe it was just because of some other circumstance. But, you know, as Phineas Fisher showed us in the last few years, it's never going to go away, probably.
No, I don't think so. All right, well, let's keep an eye on it. It'll be good. Be good to see what happens and comes out of these protest movements. See if a new hacktivism or hacktivist group emerges, or if it's anonymous once more.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye on it, and we're excited to see what happens.
For sure. Well, thank you coming on again, Lozo.
Thank you, Ben. Always a pleasure.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, Jason, that was a week.
We're here. This week so far has felt a little bit more normal to me, but I don't know what today and tomorrow and Thursday hold, so probably speaking too soon.
Yeah, we might be speaking a little too soon, although I will say our mayor did manage to finally take away the medieval step of enforcing a curfew.
The that seems unlawful, to make things unconstitutional curfew.
Yeah.
Started when it was still light outside.
That started when it was still light outside. And also, like,
in the city that never sleeps.
Yeah. And it was almost as if there was, like, you know, like armed paramilitary groups taking over swaths of the city. It's like, nah, man, it's just protesters. Like, de Blasio is just, ugh. I don't know anyone who likes him now. If you're out there, somebody who's a listener who likes de Blasio, please tell me, because you'll be the first person I meet in this city who does.
The man is hated by all.
By all. It's we can all agree on.
By the cops, by his constituents, by, you know, by the left, by the right, by the center. Poor guy. Not really poor guy. He's given some of the worst interviews I've ever heard, said some of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
He really has. And his backstepping on this curfew issue was just hilarious. It made it seem like it was his fault.
Can we talk briefly about my the cops are gaslighting us piece, which I think went up before or after last week's episode, which was basically like after Ferguson police killed Michael Brown in 2014, the big like win at that time from the protests, like the police reform that was supposed to stop all of this, was putting body cameras on every cop.
Yes.
And the Obama administration spent something like $140 million. I'm making that number up. It's in the piece. Outfitting cops around the country with body cameras. And the thinking was, if the cops knew that they were being watched at all times, they would be less likely to use force. And, you know, if they did use force, you could then go to the tape and look at it and then hold them accountable. And it's been 5 years and none of that happened. Like, none of it at all. Like, I think it's something like 95% of cops in the United States have body cameras at this point, which is like, great.
But they never seem to be on.
So they never seem to be on. There was a thought that there'd be like a psychological effect if cops knew they were being watched at all times, Turns out that there's no psychological effect because there's no consequences for cops, so they don't care. Like, this is what studies have shown, like, large scale, the best data that we have, like randomized studies, have shown that body cameras have no effect on police use of force, and that's for a few reasons. One, there's no consequences, so they don't work psychologically speaking. Two, cops turn them off all the time and then use their unions to like prevent any sort of like consequences for turning them off. They also like block them with, you know, tape or whatever. And instead, we have body cameras that are either being like, we have companies that are trying to add facial recognition and extra surveillance measures to body cameras. So that hasn't worked either. And then now we have, I've started talking about this because we have de Blasio, who has been saying, like, when confronted with video of cops doing police brutality, running over protesters, beating them with batons, et cetera, he's saying, don't believe the video. That's not like the full context. And it's like, what we did,
especially when you see that one video that was particularly heinous last week. And then today, actually, the New York AG actually, or yeah, AG, I said it right. I always mix up. Or our DA said that they're bringing charges against the cop who just sort of aggressively attacked that woman who was just slightly in his way. Like, now this is like 2 weeks ago, and they're bringing charges against him. But it largely has to do with not like the guy wasn't wearing a body camera, but it was, you know, citizens in the street who were taking video of it that held him accountable.
Right. And so what has actually been the thing that has maybe sort of held police accountable, at least in some cases, is the proliferation of cell phones, smartphones. I mean, you know, 2014, like, obviously smartphones existed, but not everyone had one. And now people know that they should film cops when there could be an altercation. And that's something that we've seen out of all these protests. Like, the cops are being filmed at all times. And unlike body cameras, which in addition to like not having an effect, a lot of them aren't subject to Freedom of Information Act requests. A lot of them, you know, are never made public. Like, people are uploading videos of police brutality in real time to Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And so these things are going viral, and like, sometimes the cops are being held accountable. So that's good. The bad thing is that, you know, you have people like de Blasio and Andrew Cuomo in New York, and you know, other leaders, mayors in other cities that say, hey, there's more to the video than you're seeing, even when, you know, the video clearly shows, like, in many cases, shows an entire altercation, like shows a person not doing anything and then suddenly getting chased by a cop, or shows like maybe an empty water bottle being thrown at a cop and a cop responding by pepper spraying and beating the shit out of like a group of people. And it's like, now we're just being gaslit to the point where they're saying, like, yeah, police brutality is a problem, but you're not being fair because, like, you can't trust your own eyes.
Here, let's just let this, just gonna let this ice cream truck go by.
Yeah, we got an ice cream truck in the mix here. I love it.
What's this song called? Because Americans always ask me, they're like, don't you recognize that ice cream song?
Dude, it's just the ice cream truck song. I have no idea what it's called. There's like a couple different ice cream truck songs.
That's definitely the one in my neighborhood.
This should make it into the pod. I love it. Ice cream truck. That's a good, it's a very warm and nice day out.
Well, where I'm from, we just have bells. It's like a bell. But anyway.
Deprived. Yeah, I mean, there's a few different ones. There's like, you know, the good humor one, which I don't know, Kato can look up. I think there's like a good humor theme song that I know from like going to the beach. And then Pop Goes the Weasel is one that they play at the beach, like near my parents' house. You know that song, Pop Goes the Weasel?
Yep. Oh, I know Pop Goes the Weasel.
Oh, good, good. All right. Let's transition. Yeah. Transition to a different story.
Yep. Let's go to our first one up on, well, this is another, again, it's almost like we can call them a friend of the show, but the NSO, caught giving demos to the LAPD.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago with a different police department, but yeah, NSO is like desperate to get into the United States seemingly because they are demoing their phone hacking tech to the LAPD, which is the same phone hacking tech that that Saudi Arabia uses and all these other, you know, authoritarian regimes use. And it turns out that the LAPD was looking at it as well. And apparently they didn't buy it because it was too expensive, which is funny because the LAPD's budget is like $3 billion a year or something like that.
Yeah, I think that would be, it might not be the greatest PR decision given today's state of affairs, especially when, you know, there was recent reporting done that the LAPD really does have one of the most inflated multi-million dollar budgets in like the entire world for cops and police departments. Yeah. It's like one of the biggest, one of the most financed ones, I think, in America, is it not?
It's New York, then LA, I think. But I'm not positive.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, it's just another case of like this really nefarious company coming in and trying to break into America, but also just, and yet more examples like our episode last week when we focused on the Predator drone that was deployed against protesters, just this increasing sort of military grade surveillance equipment being used by law enforcement against American citizens is just, you know, it's enough to make all those anti-government types legitimately worried and not have to revert to conspiracy to make their assumptions.
Yeah. But yeah, it's not, I mean, it's just like the further militarization of the police. So not good.
Not good. So we also, just on that topic, Slack had a blog post about how their technology is used by police. And then they got rid of it.
Yeah, this is like part and parcel of these, you know, Black Lives Matter statements that have been put out by a bunch of different companies that also enable the subjugation of marginalized communities, especially Black people. And Edward Ungueso had a really great piece on this last week where it's like Amazon was like, hey, like Black Lives Matter, but also, you know, they have recognition, which is facial recognition software that they sell to police that is racially biased and inaccurate. You know, they have Ring, which is just a horrible surveillance company that we have written about extensively. They don't treat their workers very well and tried to slander a work organizer at a warehouse, a Black guy who they said was not articulate, which is like very coded in racist language. And then now we have like Slack, who kind of in the middle of the night just disappeared this effusive blog post that they had explaining how these police departments use Slack to like organize operations and stuff like that. And they just like deleted it off the internet, didn't say anything. And then we learned that, you know, Slack still works with these cops. Like Slack has contracts with a bunch of federal agencies. It works with a bunch of, you know, police departments, but it's trying to pretend like it doesn't, which is just shady as hell.
It's real shady as hell. It's very sus behavior. If we're being
very sus,
it's very sus behavior. Yeah. Very sus. All right. So here's some good news that was precipitated by that story that I believe you and Joseph published a week ago or so, when you caught a Predator drone in the air surveilling the Minneapolis protests. AOC and some other lawmakers, because of that story, were spurred on to start asking the government what's going on and justify the use of it. So that's, I mean, it's a bit of a, it's a win. At least that's happening.
Yeah, so it's a win. There's two actions that happened, which is awesome. So AOC and some other senator or Congress people sort of demanded answers from CBP about why a Predator drone was surveilling protesters in Minneapolis. And then separately, they wrote a letter to, I think it was CBP, the FBI, the DEA, and one other agency, asking them about all of the surveillance of protests, which include, you know, stingrays, spy planes, dirt boxes, things we've talked about before. And both of those cited our reporting, which is just like great to see. And it's good to see lawmakers demanding transparency and answers from these agencies, which have like deployed surveillance against largely peaceful protesters pretty indiscriminately. I mean, this is not a federal agency, but like the NYPD has been flying helicopters over every single protest. Like they were above my house until 2 a.m. last night, shining a spotlight on protests. And it's just like, not, it's not good. You know, that there's very little preventing these agencies and these militarized police from using like military style tactics to surveil peaceful protesters, which is very bad.
Yes. Yes, it is. But you know, there's hope in the fact that at least,
yeah, good. They're demanding answers.
Yeah, exactly. Know? I mean, that doesn't, you don't see that too often. You know, maybe this will go somewhere and the city's going to actually, the city and the country will actually improve.
Yeah. I mean, I think the takeaway is like, it's great to see millions of people out on the streets, you know, it's like, it's a very, very, very good thing. It'd be a bad thing if people weren't protesting this. And I think we should at least take heart that people are protesting and that there have been at least at the moment some nominal wins. And I think there's probably more to come when it comes to police reform and defunding the police and all that sort of thing. So good to see. Good step. Glad people are out in the streets. Keep protesting and stay safe.
Absolutely. And you'll be hearing from us next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.